Larry Brooks, this is supposed to be a time where everything is golden in Western New York, and your new book suggests that that's not quite true.
Well, that's true, Mike, and I think it's a matter of perspective. For many young people and newcomers to the region who became familiar with the area in the 1970s and later, and I think the 70s was the trough of the region's fortunes, to them, everything looks like up. And that's true. Everything has improved since the 1970s. However, for those of us who have a longer perspective and remember the area in its heydays in the 1950s, we've seen better times, and I can give some examples of that. For instance, when I was a kid, and this was around 1960, my mother and aunt used to bowl in a bowling alley on the second floor of a building at Tupper in Maine. And they would bowl on Tuesday evenings, starting at like 7 o'clock at night. They used to take me with them, and being bored with watching bowling, let me wander on Main Street. Now, this was a weekday evening, and they would let a 10-year-old kid walk on Main Street because it was safe. And from Seneca to Delavan, there would be stores open every weeknight on every block, and there were pedestrians on the sidewalks on every block, and it was safe for a child or a family to walk on the streets. Today, although the foot of Main Street has never looked better in all my life, if you go north of the 190, any time other than regular business hours, it's dead. And so Main Street has not come back. Another good example is at Riverbend. While Solar City promises to create lots of brand new jobs, and that number fluctuates from week to week, it's still not to the level where it was in the 1970s when Republic Steel was there. And if you look at the salaries of the steel workers in the 70s versus what Solar City promises, I think in inflation-adjusted dollars, you will see that those jobs back in the 70s probably paid better than Solar City promises. So there's fewer jobs and less well-paying. And there's dozens of other examples I can give you. For instance, we used to have a Humboldt Parkway in the 1950s, and now we have a subgrade scar running through the middle of the city. So there are many examples of where we are today compared to where we were in the heyday, and it's not progress.
But obviously the argument about Solar City is that when Republic Steel was there, it was this polluting behemoth of bad air and cleanups that are still going on, even to build the Solar City plant. But Solar City is the 21st century. It's solar power, non-polluting. We don't get into the pollution involved in making solar panels, but that's a separate situation. But just that this is moving forward to brighter, sunny uplands.
That's certainly true, and that aspect of it is progress. But at the peak of Republic Steel and Bethlehem Steel in the area, these were times before there was a lot of knowledge about environmental science and a lot of regulation of businesses and pollution. So today, even steel making is a much cleaner industry than it used to be. So while it's right that the creation of hardware for renewable energy is better than a steelmaking operation, that's only one aspect of the whole picture. And I think that's one of my main points, is that this book looks at the whole picture, not just one aspect of today's news, but puts it in context and looks at the bad side as well as the good side.
Now, the book suggests a lot of bad sides. I'm just pulling out the page here where you put a list of problems together. And toxic waste, polluted fresh water, population trends are not favorable. The health remains below average. Our education system needs improvement. Sprawl, social capital in Buffalo just isn't very good. And obviously, Buffalo is a term, as you mentioned in the book, that tends to cover pretty much most of Western New York, but especially Buffalo and Niagara. That's a pretty damning list of things that aren't good.
Well, in some areas, it's been a downward trajectory. Regarding the health of the population, for instance, back in 1900, series of editors, including Mark Twain, wrote a guidebook to visitors to the Pan Am Exposition. And in that guidebook, they declared, in the introduction, they declared that this area was one of the healthiest cities in the country. Now, what we found out since then is that, according to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and health statistics from the New York State Department of Health, Erie and Niagara counties are among the unhealthiest in New York State. So we don't talk about that very often, and it's important that this is in the forefront of our conversation so that we can work on this problem and solve it. In other areas, for instance, the environment, we have terrific natural assets, but they're all threatened and they're all degrading. We're losing 500 acres of farmland a year, and our Great Lakes freshwater is being threatened by five major forces: climate change, pollution, diversion, invasive species, and loss of habitat. So we need to talk about this and work on it on an ongoing basis. The problems won't solve themselves.
Isn't this, though, the argument that was around in the 60s and 70s, especially, that we need to get rid of, and this wasn't just a Buffalo argument, that we're going to get rid of all these polluting industries, we're going to clean up the air and the water, and somebody on the other side says, well, what about the jobs? We're going to get rid of the clean air, get the clean air and clean water. That there's almost a disconnect on the issues here.
There sure is, and the flaw is largely in how economic science looks at, in particular, environmental capital. There's an almost total absence of metrics of environmental capital and ecosystem services. We don't know how to value that. There's a recent book out by Dirk Philipson called The Little Big Number: How the GDP Came to Rule the World and What to Do About It. And he continually cites the opinions of economists who say that the GDP is no longer a valid measure of how well we're doing, and in large part because it doesn't truly value ecosystem services. So that kind of measure has been absent. And so people who only look at the economic side are ignoring the health impacts and environmental impacts of economic activity. This is an absence of the way we measure things. So now we're getting smarter about that. The Clean Air Coalition of Western New York, for instance, is looking forward to the day when the Huntley plant closes because of its polluting characteristics. But they're also looking at ways to find replacement jobs for the workers there and replacement income for the township that receives income from taxes from the Huntley plant.
But isn't that the argument that, fine, we'll get rid of all the polluting power plants, we'll get rid of coal plants, we'll get rid of nuclear plants, and people can sit there on their laptops or their computers using all kinds of electrical energy and protest? Isn't there a balance in there somewhere between the demand for electricity and the need to produce it by some other method than something out of Star Trek?
Well, it turns out that there's always the flip side to a story. And the flip side to the loss of Huntley is that it's more business for Solar City. And there was a study done by a group of scientists from Stanford University, Cornell, and the Oak Ridge Laboratories in Tennessee that detailed how New York State could switch entirely to renewables by 2025. And that plan is referenced in my book. So we could switch entirely from the old way of generating energy to the new way of generating energy. And in their study, they proclaim and they virtually guarantee that there would be more employment under the new way. So this is nothing, I see this as nothing but promising and positive.
We have a situation here, and you talk about it a lot in the book, the poverty, the job situation, the declining or poor educational system for some. How are these people coming out of bad school systems, and there's more than one here in this area, going to get jobs if the low-skill jobs are gone?
Actually, if you take a look at the economic statistics, the growth in jobs in this region is largely in low-skill, retail, restaurants, that sort of industry. It's in service jobs that the real growth is occurring. So the low-wage jobs are actually the ones that are expanding. In addition to that, I think that regarding poverty, that's also a matter of perception. I learned something very interesting from Sam McGavern and the Partnership for the Public Good. While Buffalo carries the reputation of being one of the third or fourth poorest city in the United States, the truth of the matter is the greater Buffalo Niagara metro region has a poverty rate below the national average. That is to say, we are wealthier than the rest of the country. It's a small margin, but nonetheless, we're doing better off as a region than the rest of the country. But we carry this perception as being one of the poorest areas because we segregate our poor into two urban cores. And if we were to integrate our community, it would look a lot better.
But as you mentioned in the book, in the case of the vote on a county police force about 50 years ago, the public had a chance and turned it down.
That's true. There's a great resistance to acting as a unified community. Now, the cover photo of my book shows the demolition of the Father Baker Bridge, and the bridge is in pieces in this photograph. And that, I think, is symbolic of the region. We have 64 different governments in the metro area. We have fractured governance, and that weakens the entire region. We are all working separately from each other, and if we were to unify, we'd be a much stronger place. But we're weak and we can't solve our problems because in some cases we're working against each other and there's a tremendous resistance to making a regional government and one community out of the greater Buffalo area. So I see that as a big problem. I see that as one of the three largest problems in the area. The fact that we have fractured governance, segregation, and sprawl.
That's Larry Brooks, who's author of Buffalo Niagara, Diagnosis and Prescription for Change. Larry, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mike.
And I'm Mike Desmond.